Today, we continue our conversation on loving, honoring, and caring for your aging parents. Be back in just a moment.
This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life.
Well, hello, everyone. It's good to be back on the podcast. I hope you're doing well. We are getting dumped with snow here in the Northeast, which has been really fun for the kids. Some normalcy, just going outside and playing. I hope you're doing well with everything going on. It's still COVID, still times of uncertainty, but it's amazing how resilient we all have become and how we've just learned to take things as they come. So today we are going to continue our conversation on loving and honoring, caring for our aging parents, something that many of us are facing right now, especially in the age demographic that does listen to this podcast. And I'm just seeing many friends start to navigate these very complicated issues of caring for your parents. Certainly, there are conversations that are important to have when you can have them, and they're difficult ones. I know I really enjoy the conversation. If you didn't hear it, the last episode on the podcast with my friend Rebecca Gallagher about her story and her faith in navigating the situation with her father. It was a really great episode. And this is part two. I am talking with Dr. Kristen Abbott, a psychologist in our town, Ridgefield, Connecticut, who specializes in many of these issues, including caregiving and aging, as well as issues having to do with grief, something that many people have experienced in this season. And she just shares her expertise with us, some of the things that we need to be aware of, both when we are caregiving or just some of the normal things we will face as our parents get older. It's a really insightful conversation, and she shares some of her personal experiences as well. And it just made me reflect on this stage of life, especially those of us who are in the sandwich generation, taking care of our own families and kids, but also having parents who might begin to need more help during this time and some of the things that we can anticipate. So here is part two of our conversation with my friend and psychologist, Kristen Abbott. Kristen, thank you so much for making the time in this incredibly busy season to join me for this really important conversation.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So this is a time, you know, I know, because we're treating people, we're seeing people all the time where people are just tapped out. You know, even therapists were getting tapped out, but especially those who are caregiving. So share with me, what are some of the things you're seeing caregivers face right now? What are they struggling with?
Right. Well, burnout. You know, burnout is basically, you know, a state of exhaustion, physical, emotional, mental exhaustion. And caregiver burnout is one of the most common kinds of burnout that we see typically, but now during this pandemic, it's rampant. Everybody's experiencing burnout. So what we're seeing is that people are feeling more depressed, perhaps more anxious, and, you know, their attitudes are changing from positive and hopeful and upbeat to more of like a negative or, you know, exhausted or maybe kind of withdrawn attitude. So we're starting to see that because people really just don't have the resources at their disposal that they typically would.
And this is a harder time, as you and I talked about, to actually caregive for these elderly people, right? Because of all the restrictions.
It is the barriers that are in place. So you know, if your aging parents aren't nearby, then you may need to, you know, put yourself either at risk to travel, or you may need to call in reinforcements and trust other people or allow other people in the household that you wouldn't necessarily want to do. So there's a lot of compromise that's happening.
I feel like this holidays, during the holidays, it kind of all comes to the surface too. I know just with some of some of my clients, even my own parents who are not, I mean, they have pre-existing conditions, they're healthcare workers, But we're trying to be really cautious with seeing them. And then they have this attitude too, especially my father, like, how many more of these am I going to have left? So let me just enjoy it. But how do you navigate those types of conversations? Because you do want to have them around as long as you can.
Yes, you do. And it is. It's such a really tortured position to be in, to recognize that maybe you don't have that many holidays left with your aging parents, and you want to make sure you spend it with them. And yet, you know, is it safe for me to do that? How do I do that in a way that isn't going to put them at risk, isn't going to put me at risk or others? And so I think SNL actually just did a funny skit about this.
Oh, really?
About how to have this conversation with your parents about not coming home for Christmas. You know, I think it's on everybody's minds. There is no right way. There's no right way to have this conversation. I think that we all have to have, you know, an understanding and an agreement that what's happening in the world right now is uncomfortable. Mm. So to try to have comfortable conversations around it is just not realistic. So if we can kind of give ourselves the credit that we may not be able to meet people's needs, even if our intentions are there, that's a good start. Because a lot of us do put that pressure on ourselves. You know, we're in a position of responsibility. So therefore, we have to make sure that we're meeting everybody else's needs. That's, you know, in a good situation, that's not always realistic.
That's
so I
true.
Think how we navigate that is just with a lot of honesty. You know, I always like to start an uncomfortable conversation by calling it what it is and saying, this is a very uncomfortable thing for me to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And empathy, I'm thinking as well, you know, to just validate, I know this is what you want. I know this is what we would all want. And it's heartbreaking that we can't do this, but this is why we feel like this decision is important.
Absolutely. You know, empathy, that's a beautiful point. And to that end, you know, just because you can't necessarily meet somebody's immediate need for togetherness doesn't mean that that can't be met in the long run.
That's so,
so
true.
To say, okay, well, if we can't meet up for Christmas on Christmas Day, what plans can we put in place so that we don't feel like we are not going to see each other for another year? You know, can we put something on the calendar for, you know, hopefully, you know, and nothing has to be set in stone, but hopefully for when the weather turns a bit warmer, and then just sort of reassess and see where things lie then. And then how are we going to make sure that we stay in contact and stay close to one another without seeing each other in person?
Yeah. And hopefully there's some hope. We can instill some hope now with this vaccine coming out.
It's so close. It is. And I think this is where we've really got an advantage to when we started, is that we can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible, even if we don't know exactly what that date is, it's possible to start thinking about future plans again.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, you know, a lovely thing to help carry us through this next little bit. So absolutely, when you're talking to your family and they want to see you and you're not, you know, able to, or you don't feel safe in doing that, to be able to say, okay, but we still have that possibility in the near future. So let's talk about what are we going to do then and how are we going to really make it special?
I love that. You know, going back to that idea of burnout for that caregiver, and especially those who are in that sandwich generation, for anyone out there who hasn't heard that term, it's when you're kind of in the middle and you're caring for your own family. And for some, they have a young family that still needs you, but at the same time, trying to navigate the needs of your parents. And for many, there are people who have their parents actually in their own home. What are the things, do you feel, that lead a caregiver to get to that point of burnout?
You know, there are so many things, but the one that always comes to my mind first is ignoring your own needs.
Mm.
So, you know, I say this a lot, that old idea of putting your oxygen mask on first is so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the analogy that gets overused for a reason, because if we do not tend to our needs, we're so susceptible to burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be able to meet everybody's needs in the immediate, but in a short amount of time, we're going to run out of air and we won't be able to do anything for anyone. So taking care of yourself is not just a luxury, it's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you even get to do, it's something that you're supposed to do. So if we can think about that, if we can think about finding that balance. Now, if you're, you know, in the position where you have children at home, or, you know, or even adult children that still rely on you to some extent, and you're an adult child of aging parents who have, you know, caregiving needs as well. Taking care of yourself doesn't mean that you go to the spa every week, and it doesn't mean you go on fancy vacations. What it means is that you make sure that you're getting enough sleep, and that you have time for exercise and nutrition, mm-hmm. That you have outlets and supports and people that you talk to, and you don't feel completely isolated in your situation. It means that you take 5 minutes every day to think about, hey, it's been a while since I have gotten up from this computer. I need to rest my eyes and stretch my legs and get a glass of water. So it's really just fundamentally understanding, how do you keep enough fuel in the tank to be able to continue doing all the things that you're doing?
I like that. How do you keep enough fuel in the tank? So the basic things to keep you physically healthy, mentally healthy, emotionally healthy, so that you can keep going and then right. keep everybody else going. And that's a conversation we have with moms too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Moms of young babies. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or even moms, any mom really navigating those needs, working moms. Moms who are at home navigating, you know, multiple kids, especially during this time with COVID and the uncertainty of, are they coming home? I know we just got a notice that they're coming home for a couple days, right? We got that one
right.
the week of Christmas. Yeah. I was so grateful they told us that like 2 weeks ahead, you know, and didn't tell
Agreed.
Us the 2 days ahead because,
wow. Yeah, it's so helpful to not be blindsided by it.
Yes, because we've been blindsided so many times, which just adds to that stress and anxiety. For sure. You know, when we're talking Absolutely. About self-care, like you're talking about, and like you said, it doesn't have to be extravagant. It doesn't have to be, you know, for some people, they automatically think of getting their nails done. That's not what we're talking about either, although that could help if that's something you enjoy. But there's so Right. much guilt around taking that time for yourself. Do you come across that too with your clients, just them feeling
I
guilty?
I do. And, you know, I try to take life lessons from everywhere that I go. So I'm gonna give you a life lesson that I got from my son's kung fu teacher. Mm-hmm. My son and forgive me, I'm rambling a little bit, but there's a point here.
Keep
my
going.
My son recently got his junior black belt, and after the black belt test, the teacher said to him, he's actually doing it on Zoom, so I get to listen in on this. The teacher said, you know, now that you have a black belt, you need to understand that self-defense is not something that you get to use. It's something that you are supposed to use. Mm. Protecting yourself is a right. Taking care of yourself is a right. So you never go out and lay hands on somebody for, you know, because you're angry at them. But if somebody tries to hurt you, not only do you get to use your self-defense, but you're also supposed to use it. Mm. So when people talk to me about guilt, I tell them that story, and you know, I tell them, not only are you allowed to take care of yourself, you are supposed to take care of yourself. You matter. You are important. This is not a luxury. It's a necessity. Mm. We have this ability to engage in self-care for a reason, and we have this desire to engage in self-care for a reason because we're supposed to do it. That's how we function, and that's how we make sure that we don't get hurt.
Mm. It's a right, and it's part of... I think it's part of really appreciating your life and your body and your health and taking care of it. In some ways, you yeah. can even look at self-care as a gratitude practice. If you're grateful for your yes. life, right, then you will
oh,
value
yeah, I
it.
I love that perspective.
I was just thinking
Absolutely.
About that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought up gratitude because gratitude is one of the greatest things that we can do to engage in self-care. It's funny, I've already had this conversation at least twice today because gratitude has been getting me through this pandemic in ways that are so immeasurable. And it is, it's one of the fundamental things that we can do to care for ourselves. And I think what happens with gratitude is we tend to think of it as just the big things. Okay, I'm grateful for my health, or I'm grateful for my parents still being here with me, or I'm grateful that I have a warm house and a warm bed. And those are wonderful things to be grateful for, as we should. But we get the most bang for our buck with gratitude when we focus on the really small moments, mm-hmm. when we're really attuned to the little details. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, how does it feel to have that first sip of coffee in the morning? Looking out the window in between your Zoom calls or your meetings at work and noticing how the light is playing off of things. I'm sitting here actually, it's a cold day and I have a blanket on my lap and it's very soft. So I'm just kind of noticing the softness of it. Mm. Those little moments can be really huge in terms of providing some solid ground underneath us to help us balance out all of the worry and the helplessness.
You know, those everyday things that we do take for granted. And it was interesting. I was listening to someone talk about having COVID and they were saying they lost their sense of smell and they love coffee and they couldn't taste or smell coffee for months.
Yes.
For months. So when you said that, I was like, oh, I'm so grateful for that. Because after I heard that woman talk about how she couldn't taste her coffee or smell it or her food, that's horrible for weeks and months on end. But we take those things for granted because they're part of our everyday, you know.
You don't notice these little things until they're absent. And I think there's a real power in deliberately attending to and paying attention to those little, small, simple pleasures, because it really does help you to see that there is balance. Of course, there's helplessness and sadness and everything that's going on now, but there's also so much balance.
That's so interesting. And we know neurochemically, our brain lights up in gratitude. We get the release of the dopamine, serotonin. So it definitely, I mean, neurobiologically makes a difference in our mood as well. So I love that.
It works better if you say it out loud too. Mm. There's a lot of, there's a lot of interesting brain activity. We see like the shift from our forebrain to our like prefrontal cortex in the, in the sophisticated part of our brain when we put words on things. So if you can say, wow, that's really beautiful, or, oh my gosh, that tastes so good. We see even more benefit there.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even know that. That's a great tip.
Yeah.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, with the guilt, going back to guilt, because I feel like so many people struggle with guilt and it just surfaces in different ways. But certainly this is one of the areas. I had a client and it was really interesting. She's older. She has three kids who are grown and working, out in the world. And we were talking about self-care. And she said, well, I can't rest. And what we were looking at is, okay, let's follow the guilt. Where is it coming from? And where did you get this idea that you couldn't do these things? You shouldn't do these things. And she was thinking back and she said when she was younger and her father would come home and walk in the door, everyone had to be doing something. It was important that he saw that everyone was doing something and no one was just sitting around, because that's what they valued in that house. They were doers.
Right.
So it's interesting to see where our guilt comes from, but to really reevaluate it in this context, when you look at it, how you put it, like, this is our right. This is our necessity to take care of ourselves. We see that so much of the guilt is unwarranted, but oftentimes not knowing where it comes from, not knowing where we have those associations, they're so powerful how they manifest.
Absolutely. And it sounds like there was really good work there done between you and your client. And I always give people credit when they can say, okay, this doesn't feel quite right to not tend to myself, but yet I can't bring myself to that point where I'm able to really tend to myself. So where is that coming from? The insight just is half the battle. It's so tricky to really be able to look at that honestly. So, I think that's wonderful that she was able to do that. But this is more than just individual family systems. This is, if we look at our society as a whole and the expectations that we have of ourselves, we tend to ask ourselves to do everything and to do it well. And anything less than that is seen as a failure.
Kristen, you talked about that fear of failure, and I think that becomes really challenging because the expectations that are on us in that sandwich generation, there's so many of them, and in some ways, they're almost realistic what we put on ourselves to be able to do during this time.
Yeah, and listen, it's enough when we are caring for just parents or just children. And then when you multiply that, it actually increases by more than a factor of two. So now our expectation is to be caring for everyone in our lives. And we tend to take a back seat. Our immediate needs take a back seat. And that is really tricky because that is when we really do risk
burnout, when we are giving away more than we are putting in the tank. So even though the demands are higher, it becomes even more crucial at that point to engage in good self-care. And that's such a tricky thing to do, to make the time for it, to put it at the top of the list. But it really is like allowing yourself to have enough gas in the car and not asking the car to do a cross-country trip on one tank or on half a tank or even on fumes.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. And how do you navigate with clients what these expectations are to be able to care for your own family? And I know even for us, you know, my parents are working, they're well, but there's still emotional needs now that they're getting older that I see that
absolutely
that is on us to meet as the family that's around, as trying to get the grandkids to be able to spend time with them. They love spending time with them, but just navigating their mm-hmm. own schedules, work schedules, the kids' schedules, and then making time for that yes. becomes really tricky. So how do you help clients navigate those challenges? And then, you know, understandably say, okay, when you're doing all this, I can see why you think you don't have time for self-care.
Yes. Right. So I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that there truly is not a right way to do things. It would be so nice if there was a right way to do things, if there was a formula that we could follow. But essentially, we are doing the best that we can do. And so a good conversation to have with, you know, with your aging parents, with spouses, with siblings, with your own supports are, what expectations do others have for me? How do those differ from my expectations for myself? What are the different generational expectations? You know, we have a society now where we are not as readily taking in aging parents into our homes the way that maybe a few generations ago that was sort of the norm. Mm-hmm. So really, I think laying out the expectations, having those honest conversations, and then being honest with yourself about what your limitations are. You are not going to be able to be everything for everyone. That is just simply not realistic. It's not something that we can do. And so where can I ask for support? Where can I delegate? Where can I simply just say, hey, that need is not going to get met right now, and I will do my very best to try to meet it when I am able. There's a lot of work in just, you know, finding some acceptance of what you are not fully equipped to do, and sort of sitting with the sadness or frustration about that, but also giving yourself that permission to be human.
I think too, just going about having a conversation about expectations, we might uncover expectations that exist that are unsaid, that we're not really aware of, but we feel the pressure from. And I think,
yes.
you know, not just our own, but maybe expectations that other people have for us that they may not even be aware of. But when we give words to them, when we voice them, I think it becomes more clear, okay, that actually might not be realistic. That I can see why that's really challenging given the demands of your regular life.
Absolutely. And often the expectations, to your point, that we have of ourselves are much higher than the expectations that others have of us.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me, I had an assignment when I was in grad school to come up with my own sort of, my own sort of beliefs that maybe could be challenged. As we were learning about things like automatic thoughts and trying to figure out how to challenge negative beliefs, I had this assignment where I was meant to just sort of observe what was happening in my life and figure out maybe what expectation I was putting on myself that wasn't necessarily fair or realistic. And I remember having a conversation with my mother on the phone where she really wanted to come and visit me. And that particular weekend, I was so behind in coursework and catching up with studying and getting ready for tests. And typically what I would have said was, okay, you know, come, I'll make the time, I'll figure it out. And because of this assignment, I had said to her at that time, you know what, I really do want to see you, but I'm so busy this weekend. Can we find a different time? And her response, of course, was, yeah, that's fine, no problem.
Mm.
And so, as you said, it was so helpful to just sort of vocalize, my needs are different than yours. Let's try to figure out how we can negotiate. And I think that becomes true when you're caring for your aging parents as well, that their needs, their desire to see you, spend time with you, your children, of course, are going to be there, but they may not be as intense as your fear or your worry is letting you believe.
That's a great way to go about that conversation too, because you validated the piece that often I think is at the heart of the issue. When we don't make time, when we don't show up, people feel like we don't care. And that's not the case. Right. You said, I really do want to see you. I want that. You know, I care about you. I'm just trying to figure out how to make this work. So help me with this. So that person knows that the desire is there. It's not that the desire is not there. It's just the actual schedule, coordinating it, is complicated.
And then a beautiful thing happens when you do face that discomfort of not being able to meet that need. You find out that not only does the other person also see you as important, but that nothing catastrophic will happen if you allow yourself to tend to your own needs.
Mm-hmm. I know one thing that has helped me put this in perspective during this time, and like I said, you know, my parents really don't depend on us for very much, but still it is challenging to navigate. You know, we want to spend time with them, and some one way that I've put this in perspective is I recognize that the time we have now is a gift. You know, we're not promised time forever, and we are on borrowed time. And I constantly go back to that. This is not going to be forever, and that thought is really devastating to me, that I want to try and maximize this time as much as I can, because sometimes we forget that piece. We take that piece for granted, that we're going to have these opportunities time and again, when the reality is we don't know. You know, we don't know how much time we have. So that helps me to reframe it, you know, and say, okay, then I absolutely do need to make time for this while I have it, because it is a gift.
It is. And, you know, a lot of times, even if there's something that we want to do, it can feel like a burden because it's another thing on our to-do list. Mm-hmm. And spending time with family certainly can fall into that category. Look, it's lovely to have that time together, but you have all the preparation. Maybe you have the cleaning, the cooking, or you're trying to negotiate schedules, or you're just trying to, you know, find the energy to put one more thing on the calendar. So, you know, I think it's really also important to remember that quantity is not the same as quality. And if you are going to spend the time, you know, you and I are fortunate to have parents that are still independent and healthy and capable. But as you say, there's no guarantees that we will have that forever. Mm-hmm. So we do want to enjoy that time. And so I like to think of, okay, if we're going to make the time to do something, let's not have a weekly obligation. But if we're going to do it once a month, let's make it a really great event. Let's make it something that we're all really going to enjoy. So, you know, right now, obviously with COVID, that's going to look different, but you know, we can get creative with saying, okay, well, then we're going to have, you know, an outdoor fire pit, and we're going to play games, and we're going to, do some remembering, reminiscing about, you know, going through old pictures and family and things like that. Hopefully in the near term future, we'll be able to do more things like, you know, getting together and celebrating birthdays and doing special activities. But I think as long as we focus on making the time together something that is meaningful, and, you know, that will come more naturally when we really are able to put that time in without feeling overwhelmed by it.
I think, Kristen, that's great advice. And I think also this conversation gets harder when that elderly person isn't able to do many of those things. Maybe someone is actually caring for them in their home. Maybe they are one of the primary caregivers, where the time together isn't all that enjoyable, you know, and then there are other feelings of guilt they may experience. So how do you work with someone through those situations where there is actually much more responsibility on that caregiver?
Yes, right. And again, you know, it really is about understanding, naming, discussing what your own expectations are and what theirs are, to the extent that they're able to share that with you. You know, if there is a parent in the picture who really is struggling with illness to the point where you can't have those meaningful interactions, think about what is meaningful to them. Think about what's meaningful to you when you need care. Mm. It really can be as simple as the touch of a hand. It really can be as simple as sitting next to somebody. And, you know, sometimes words don't need to be exchanged. It's really about knowing that somebody is there and somebody cares for you. So, you know, I think that the idea of tempering our expectations and making sure that they are realistic can go a long way. And also realizing that what we are providing to the ones that we love is worth so much more than we tend to value it. Mm-hmm. So just letting somebody know that they're loved, just letting somebody know that they're not alone, those things are so valuable and huge. And, you know, it can be a literal lifesaver.
And powerful just to think about it from that perspective. I also think just the experience of reflection, going back and thinking about the moments that have been really meaningful, the times where that parent has been there for you, can also help motivate to get through some of the harder times in the present.
Oh, sure.
And I know there was one,
absolutely,
one particular patient I had who was caregiving for her husband. And it was that last chapter of their life together was stressful. It was full of conflict. It was so difficult. And it was not the way she wanted to remember these last moments they had together. But once he passed away, she forgot all of that. All she could remember was the good times that they have. So for anyone experiencing that right now, know that also that season comes to an end. And like many people who've gone through that, you can go back and reflect upon what was good and what you did appreciate during that time.
Yes, and it's so hard when you're in it. Mm. It's so hard because you're so consumed by it. But, you know, I always talk with people about how our loved ones are not defined by their death. They're defined by their life.
Oh, that's so
good. And we do. We remember the good stuff so quickly once we are out of the crisis. We are able to really revel in the entirety of the lifetime that you shared.
That is such a hopeful statement. And I think that brings a lot of hope to people who are struggling right now with this kind of last chapter, these end moments where they are struggling.
Absolutely.
You're right. You forget
and
this quickly.
And it is a struggle. Yeah, yeah. And listen, you know, it's very normal to feel resentment. And it's very normal to feel burdened when you're caring for a loved one. That is such a huge emotional task. And it takes all of your bandwidth and sometimes more. So that's where we get back to the idea of making sure that you have enough in the tank, making sure that you have enough oxygen to not to necessarily thrive, but to be whole. So that you can get through that experience and start the road to moving forward.
Mm. I think for people who can't relate to that piece of it, we certainly can when it comes to parenting, you know, going through those tough moments with your kids or with your adolescents. But once you come through it, you know, you come through it in a different place, it's easier to forget those times and focus on what was good and what is good.
Oh, sure. And I think we sort of do that in a mini way every single day when our children go to sleep.
Yeah.
The moment they go to sleep, we just think, oh, they're just wonderful people and they're so fantastic. How could I ever have been mad at them?
I know. It's easy to think about that when they're asleep, right? You know, just switching gears a little, what are some of the challenges that the elderly are going through? What are some of the things that are significant to them that we as children, adult children, or caregivers have to keep in mind when we're in relationship with them in this season of their life?
Right. Well, you know, there's so many things that come to mind, but right now with COVID raging and all of the sort of restrictions that we have in place, the thing that is the most worrisome is loneliness and isolation, you know? So I think that, that's a huge challenge, particularly because if someone is retired, they don't even have the connections of work anymore. Even if work is all, you know, online right now, it's still some sort of connection. It's still some sort of sense of purpose. So being isolated and being lonely have a lot of risks for physical and mental health. We want to make sure that we are helping them to feel connected to the outside world.
Mm, I think that's so important. And, you know, I found for many of these people, it doesn't actually take much to alleviate some of the loneliness. Sometimes a call, a text, you can show up for a little bit of time. I know this weekend we just went on a hike with my parents. And it's even that time, that 1 hour meant a lot to all of us to have that experience together. I think, like you said, having the conversations, what would help you? What would you enjoy doing at this point that we could do together? And again, clarifying expectations, how often would you want that to happen? Just so we know what we're all thinking.
Absolutely. And it certainly doesn't have to be just dependent on the adult children. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that we can enlist others. We can enlist neighbors. We can enlist senior centers. We can enlist community organizations to, you know, check in on the seniors. You know, we're doing a lot of things here in Ridgefield. There are a lot of organizations here that are checking in with seniors and reaching out, making sure they have groceries, making sure that they are getting all of their needs met. So that's something that we can absolutely be seeking support with and, you know, making sure that they are not sort of left to fend for themselves.
And I think that's really meaningful to them too, to have other people aside from you connect with them. Because oftentimes I remember even when my grandparents were older, my grandmother, my mom did everything for her, but oftentimes she was the scapegoat, my mother was, and much of her stress and frustration came out on that primary caregiver, which was my mother.
Right.
And they don't always treat other people the same way. So it's good for them, for their own mood, to interact with other people as well.
Yeah, we are social beings. That's part of humanity. We need others. And the things that we typically would be getting, like that brief conversation in the checkout line of the supermarket or with the person sitting next to you in the waiting room of the doctor's office or somebody that you see as you're out on a walk, you know, we're not getting as much of that. And I think we don't realize how much that really does fill us up. Mm-hmm. And so it really can be as simple as a phone call, a note, you know, somebody coming to stand 6 feet away on the porch and say, hey, I'm running to the supermarket. What can I get for you? Mm. We need to feel like we matter. We need to feel like we are connected to others. So a little bit goes a long way.
I think that's really important that they need to feel like they matter and also that they are treated like people, not like elderly people. I know for a patient of mine, I've asked this question to my parents as well. I asked one of my patients who was 83, how old do you feel like you are? And she said, I feel like I'm like 60. So, you know, cognitively, she was very much there, but I don't think anybody expects to feel 80. Some people do, but for the most part, they feel very much younger. And I think even us, you know, in our 40s, it's like, how did we get here? You know, I don't feel 40. Sometimes I'm 27 in my brain, you know. Exactly. It's a very similar experience for them as well.
You're pointing out something really, really important, that we as a culture tend to look at somebody who is older and somebody who is aging as maybe less able or less capable. Mm-hmm. And that is, unless there is something happening physically, that, you know, is clearly causing them to need more support and more assistance. For the most part, that's really not true. You know, we don't really change because we get older. Our bodies certainly change. And certainly we may experience some cognitive decline, but we are still the essence of ourselves. And so, you know, people certainly don't want to be treated as if they are incapable. And they, you know, elderly folks don't want to be treated like they are different or be excluded in any way because, you know, they don't feel any different than they've always felt. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really, really important piece to this is, yes, we have to check in and we have to say, what do you need? But we also cannot assume that they're going to be completely helpless. And I do think that there can be some age discrimination that happens that can be really demoralizing.
Yeah,
so it's a good point.
Yep. And we almost minimize their own agency and importance in some ways as well by doing
that. We do.
You know?
We do, right. And that's why I really like having these conversations. You know, we talked about having a conversation about expectations in terms of how often are we going to see each other and what are we going to do with our time together. But there's also, you know, a lot of value in having that conversation about what do you want to retain agency of? What do you want help with? What is something that, you know, that I'm doing that maybe you don't want me to be doing that you want to be able to continue doing? And how do we navigate it when that becomes tricky?
Or even some encouragement, you know, you want me to do this, but I know you can do this and it would actually be good for you to do it. So maybe we do it together so you get comfortable and then you try it on your own. So yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure. Those conversations are important. You know, like in all fields of therapy, I think as therapists, many of us feel called to a certain field, a certain specialty. I was anxious most of my life, so anxiety is kind of my area. But for you, this is a tough field to get into. What drew you into this field?
So I kind of came to it sort of slowly and without really realizing it. But, you know, I started my training thinking that I was going to focus on teenagers, adolescents, and, you know, working a lot with that. And then when I started doing my clinical placements, particularly my clinical internship, which is sort of the last thing you have to do to earn your PhD, you have to do a year-long full-time clinical internship. And I did that at the VA, the James J. Peters VA in the Bronx, and they had a health psychology rotation, which was, you know, a lot of elderly folks throughout the hospital system that were dealing with anything from stroke to, you know, spinal cord injury to just the sort of normal cognitive issues of aging to recovering from heart attacks, things like that. And I saw a need. Concurrently, my mother was caring for my grandmother, who had suffered several strokes. And, you know, at the time, I sort of didn't really have the skill set to be able to help her with that. And that's something that I really, you know, sort of regretted at the time, that I wasn't able to give her more tools because I saw the toll that it was taking on her. So I think all of those things combined really led me to a love of dealing with people who were aging, who were going through chronic illness or, you know, or grieving or thinking about, you know, starting to prepare for the idea of dying and thinking about dying and death. And it just sort of, you know, it sort of clicked. It sort of became a natural fit. And then I started working in nursing homes and assisted care facilities and, you know, really kind of building that passion for it. And I do think that, you know, now it's, you know, the idea of integrated medicine, of thinking about chronic illness and aging as a mental health issue as much as it is a physical health issue, is becoming more commonplace. Mm. And it's really encouraging to actually see that field growing.
It's so integrated, especially with the mental health at this stage of life. I mean, in all stages of life, but especially at this point. What has been rewarding to you about working with this population?
Well, you know, honestly, they teach me way more than I can ever do for them. You know, we're talking about people who have faced just about every stage of life. So the lessons that they bring to the table are incredibly invaluable. And I like to think, you know, in mental health, we learn from everybody who comes through our doors. But to be able to learn from somebody who's had that breadth of life experience is so wonderful. And it's such it's such an honor for me to be able to do that. And then, you know, we, as you said, we all get called to this profession for different reasons, but to be able to be there for somebody who's going through something that I inevitably will go through myself, you know, is so lovely, because I feel like I can put that energy out there and do for them what I would want for somebody to do for me when the time comes. So I think there's a lot of beauty in it. And I really do feel very fortunate to be able to do what I do every day.
That's just a beautiful way of describing that. And I think some of the rewards of caregiving are very similar when we can look at it from that perspective as well.
Yes. Yes. And at the end of the day, everybody just wants to be heard. Mm. Everybody just wants their story to be valued. And, you know, it's becoming more and more acceptable for older generations to come to therapy. But, you know, this is something that's still evolving. So, you know, the more that I can make that a positive experience for people, you know, hopefully the more they will spread the word and say, you know, give therapy a try. Maybe this is something that, you know, that might be beneficial to you as well.
So good. Kristen, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your insight and all of these really important tips with all of us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for listening. I know Kristen and I had that conversation closer to the holidays, and now being in February, I am feeling a lot more hopeful, especially for those who are elderly. I know I went to get vaccinated a couple weeks ago, and my second vaccine is actually next week. And as I was waiting in line, I just saw some of these older people walk in nervous, but excited and just hopeful. And it was really emotional and moving to see them there, because they had made it this far. And we know that they are in that population that's the most vulnerable. And I keep thinking, they didn't live this long to experience their life in this way right now. They deserve to be able to hug their grandchildren and hug their family members and travel and do the things that that they're able to do at this point. And now just seeing the many people who are vaccinating, I believe we're closer to that. So I hope that you're hanging in there. I hope you're doing well. I'm starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm always reminded at this time, even though we're in the midst of winter, that the days are getting longer. It's such a beautiful thing to see light at 5 o'clock. And I think especially at this time, after we've been through quite the year, it's even more significant. Every day there's going to be a little bit more light than the day before. So hold on to that thought. Look for it as you get to the end of your day. And as you face the next day, every day there's going to be just a little bit more light. And I think that's a powerful message to us right now to hang in there. Stay the course. We're getting there. We're getting there together. And hopefully we'll reach that point where we all can step into that light fully. I hope you have a great week. Be well, live full, and I'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.